This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another edition of Making Mount Rushmore here on The Pop Experience. I am your host slash moderator slash panelist, Steve Riddle. And today's going to be an interesting one because we're going back into the overrated, underrated discussion. Of course, earlier this year we did overrated, underrated songs. And now we're going to kind of stick with the music genre for this topic. And to do so, I'm going to bring in my one panelist. It's just a two-man group tonight, and it's pretty much, he's practically my unofficial co-host at this point with the number of times he's been on, and he was on with me the last time we did Underrated and Overrated, but I'm always glad to have him back. You, of course, know him as the host of the new show A La Carte with Keithy over on the North-South Connection. He's also part of the Chronoso Monthly over there, as well as the Video Jukebox Song of the Day over here on the Pop Feed. It is my good friend, Keith Langston. Keith, how are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you, Steve?
Doing good. Always good to have you on for these.
Absolutely. I love doing these. I feel like you and I are carving a Mount Rushmore every month, and it's a joy and a privilege. I tell you, it is.
It is, definitely. I know some people will be like, well, what is it just the same, having the same guest? But you know what? You know, these are always good topics to do, and I do like having you on, so it's always good to have you.
Absolutely. We're like Barbarian and Ming, you know, or Barbarian and Haku. We're the faces of fear, and I feel like if I ever get out to Vegas and I see you, I'm just going to give you a massive bear hug when I see you, and then probably throw you in a pool or something. I don't know. But, yeah, you know, we always come together. You know what? I tell people who say why you have the same guy on, it's always good to have two differing opinions, and I feel like you and I have differing opinions quite a bit. So it's good times.
Right. Well, looking at our list here, we're definitely differing on these, which is but again, like I said, it's good. So, you know, it's always good to have different opinions. So as I said, we are going back to the underrated, overrated discussion, and we are sticking with the music genre. We, of course, as I said last time, did songs. This time around, we're going to be doing we're doing musicians and bands, and or bands, I should say. You know, bands and musicians that we think are either underrated or overrated, and for this first half, we will start, as we do, with the underrated. These are, again, artists or bands that maybe don't get enough love that they should, or just, you know, they may be just personal favorites of ours that maybe not other people know as much about. So, Keith, why don't you go ahead and give us your first entry on your Mount Rushmore of underrated musicians and or bands?
Alrighty, so I'm gonna start off with a bang from a band from the 1978 till the present, and that is an Orange County hardcore scene band of Social Distortion. Social Distortion, I feel, while a lot of people do like them, I think that they fall under the category of always being like the fourth or fifth band of whatever genre of music that you want to talk about, whether that's hardcore, you know, rock or hardcore punk rock, or even if you want to go into the realm of grunge, because I mean, they did kind of have a pretty good resurgence back in the 90s and stuff when the grunge scene really blew up. But it's one of the bands that I think that when most people hear their music, you know, you can have one of two ways. You can go, well, a lot of their stuff kind of sounds the same, but you can also say, man, but everything they put out is so much fun. It's a real good fun time. I've always kind of forget about them almost. And then whenever I kind of have them pop up either on the radio or pop up on like a random playlist that I'm putting on Spotify or whatever, it's like, oh yeah, that's right, I love Social D. And I kind of said to myself, I went, I'm not really a closet Social D fan, I'm a very public Social D fan, because I always talk about them with like my friends and stuff. So I feel like Social Distortion, while they do have a lot of bands that do say that they're influenced by, I don't think they get as much love as they should. So that's kind of the first one on my Mount Rushmore there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I saw this name, and I thought to myself, like, who are the, you know, I wasn't familiar with them, but then I looked them up and I realized, and I saw this, like, their two biggest singles were Ball and Chain and Story of My Life. I was like, oh yeah, I know that, because I do hear those occasionally on the radio. And the fact that they've been around since the late 70s and they're still going to this day is definitely quite a testament to their to the longevity that they have. And just looking at it, it's like they've gone through a crapload of band members. Mm-hmm. Just looking at it, so.
But the funny thing is, like, none of their stuff ever really charts. Like, none of their singles ever really chart. None of their albums ever really chart very high. It's just they're kind of like that, just a real, almost like, I don't want to say they're an indie band, because I don't think they're an indie band. And that was one of the things when I was kind of researching this, as I looked up, you know, it's just because I always like to go and, like, Google, you know, overrated, underrated, and just see what people say. And every underrated band was like an indie band. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, you know what? Most of them I hadn't even heard of either. So I know the California rock scene is enormous. So it's like they're all bands from California. And I just, to me, I'm like, I have to think of a band that most people would have at least heard of, but that would have said, oh, yeah, you know what? And that's exactly the kind of that's exactly what I wanted to get from you, was that kind of a reaction of just, I don't really know if I know them. And then you go in and you say, oh, yeah. I mean, they had songs like they covered Ring of Fire, Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire. That was kind of a big hit for them, at least on the, you know, in the alternative scene. Story of My Life, Bad Luck, I Was Wrong. I mean, they had a lot of good songs that like do get played on the radio from time to time. But again, not as much love as I think they rightfully deserve. So I'm glad when you went in and you went, oh yeah, now I remember those songs. So that's good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, listed as like one of the most influential punk rock bands of all time. And I'm sure if you ask a lot of bands that came up in like the 2000s and, you know, in that like the punk rock scene, they'll probably tell you that they were influenced by Social Distortion. So that's definitely a very good pick there. So I will go ahead and give my first pick, and this is one of my all-time favorite bands, and I feel like even though they've gotten some love throughout the years, I do feel like they don't get as much love as I do believe they deserve for how great they are. And I went with Evanescence. They came in, you know, so strong in 2003 with Fallen. They had, you know, the big hits Bring Me to Life and My Immortal. The fact that, you know, they were named the Best New Artist of the Year, the Grammys that year. I think, you know, the sky was the limit for them. But then, you know, everything kind of started falling apart. They had all the infighting and split up. And even to this point, they're still, you know, kind of constantly going through some, you know, group changes. The only constant really for the group has been Amy Lee. But they've had a really good run. Every album they put out, they have really good songs on it. I actually did get to see them live in concert a couple of years ago, and they were phenomenal. I love seeing them. I'm glad I got to see them. And I just feel like, considering that when you look at them, they've only had, to this point, five studio albums. You know, they've been around since, like I said, since 2003. And they're still, you know, still going strong today. One of the most, you know, popular, you know, hard rock bands out there. But again, I still think they get enough credit just because of all the turmoil that they've gone through and everything that's, you know, kind of befallen them throughout their career. So I don't know if you have anything else to say about Evanescence.
It's funny. So when I think it was, I want to say it was probably when Bring Me to Life was everywhere. And I actually said, you know what, I'm going to make myself, this is back when you could burn CDs off your computer. I said, let me make a CD of all the hits from at the time, the Marvel movies. It wasn't even the MCU yet, though. This was back where I was pulling songs from like the original, the Raimi Spider-Man's, and then obviously the Daredevil. And it was because of Bring Me to Life. Like I said, let me make a mix CD of all the hits from like the Marvel movies. I remember, I think there was that, it wasn't Stone Temple Pilots. Was it, it was the song from the Ang Lee Hulk movie that, I don't think it was Stone Temple Pilots. So I think it was the other Scott Weiland band. Was it not Velvet Underground? What was the other name of his band?
Velvet Revolver.
Velvet Revolver, yeah, that he did with, that was with Guns N' Roses band. And
yes.
Right, yeah. And I think they had a song on the Hulk soundtrack. And so I had this like CD, but it was because of Bring Me to Life. I love that song. So yeah, I think that's a great pick. I mean, especially since, you know, if they've kind of stayed strong with still being able to tour, and I mean, bands go through changes all the time. Look at the Eagles, look at like Fleetwood Mac, you know, bands change lineups and stuff and have differing people go in and out and stuff like that. So that's not totally uncommon. And I guess if you're right with Amy Lee being like the one presence of the band, I mean, that makes sense. She's the lead vocalist. That's who you want to keep in a band, right? So I can agree though. That's a great pick. Absolutely.
And of course, Bring Me to Life was also the theme song for No Way Out 2003. So it's a PTB favorite too. So during that time where like all those like new yes. metal, you know, bands were getting their songs as like theme songs for the pay-per-views. So,
yep.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and give us your next entry on your Mount Rushmore of underrated musicians and or bands?
So it's funny when you were talking about, you know, Social Distortion and being one of the bands that a lot of other bands kind of say influenced them and stuff. I feel like this is another band that influenced a lot of bands. I'm kind of like that. Like when I think about like comedians, I love like a comedian's comedian, you know, guys that are just writing jokes for other comedians to laugh at. I kind of feel that way with like bands. I love bands that other bands love. So, and that's where I kind of say, like, I think that this is where they show up as underrated, because while they don't get a ton of play with everything else that they do, you know, they may have one or two songs that's big. And this one, I think, was on our list of, no, I don't think it was on our list of over. It's not on our list of overrated, underrated, but it's definitely on like one of the greatest songs of all time list. And that's The Verve. Like, and they wrote Bittersweet Symphony, but like, and that of course could probably cement them as one of the greatest. See, I can't even say it cements them as one of the greatest bands of all time. It's definitely one of the greatest songs of all time, but the whole catalog of The Verve is incredible. And that's the thing that I feel that nobody else really listens to. Most people would probably say that they were a one-hit wonder, and that is such a miscarriage of justice. They're an incredible band. It's the English rock sound. I think everybody should give them a try if you haven't listened to anything else from them. You know, go to their Spotify page, go to their YouTube page or whatever. Just look them up, listen to their work. Richard Ashcroft is an amazing songwriter. He's just, they're incredible musicians. I love them to death. I wish I could see them. You know, I mean, I think they break up a lot, and I feel like they're always breaking up, and or if anything, they're not really touring around. You know, they never come to Boston, but that's a band that I think I would have definitely had liked to have seen when they were kind of it, and or at least they were still touring and around. But if you haven't had a chance, go and listen to them. Seriously, they're such a good band. And they are they're a lot of times, like I said, they're a band's band. A lot of different musicians will say that they're like, that's their favorite band to listen to, like when they're, you know, just working on something new or just kind of just chilling on their own. So I would say check them out if you haven't, but The Verve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would probably be one of those people that have that only know them from Bittersweet Symphony, which is another one that's every now and then you hear it on the radio. It's like, oh yeah, it's like I've always liked that song. Yeah, they're another one. They're a band I've kind of definitely wanted to kind of get into more, just to kind of hear some more of their catalog. So I definitely will give you that one, and that's a really good pick there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So my next pick on my Mount Rushmore of underrated musicians and or bands is another band that's had a really good run throughout the 70s and 80s. They had a lot of really big, strong hits. But again, they're kind of one of those bands that you just don't think get enough credit for the impact they had on the business, on the music business. And that's REO Speedwagon.
Oh.
They're just such a really great band. They've had a lot of really, really great songs. You know, Time for Me to Fly, Keep on Loving You, Taken on the Run. Can't Fight This Feeling. It's just they've had so many great songs, and they're, you know, still even to this, you know, they still occasionally, you know, go to this day. Well, actually, no, I disagree. I actually am wrong about that. Apparently, they just announced their Neil Daughtry announced he was retiring back in January. So I think the band themselves is still going on, but he's not he's just not touring with them anymore. So. But I always kind of feel like I always kind of lump them in as like them, Journey, Foreigner as like those, like those bands that are kind of like so similar. They've had, you know, but I feel like people talk more about Journey and Foreigner than they do about REO Speedwagon. And that's a shame because they are great. They are a really great band. I think they definitely deserve a lot of love for everything because I don't think they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Actually, yeah, they are. They were inducted in 2021. So at least they got at least they were given that honor. But like I said, I still think they don't get enough credit for the impact that they had. So did you have anything else to say about REO Speedwagon?
I love when I listen to like other lists because then I go, oh shit, that's another good band. Like, oh, that's another thing. Yeah, REO Speed. I love that friggin' band. I remember thinking when I was a kid or younger, even like high school, college and stuff, thinking they must be a band from Canada because they had like a real Canadian band sound. And then I realized they're from like the Chicago area, I think. And I went, well, I guess that's kind of close. But no, I mean, it's just it's such a different sound for me than, like you said, Journey or Foreigner, just because it just always sounded just so much more positive and upbeat. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I do love that. I mean, Can't Fight This Feeling was like a staple at every middle school dance. I feel like, you know, it was like one of the few slow songs that the DJ would play. But Keep On Loving You, I mean, Take It On The Run. I love when like Adam Sandler will put like Take It On The Run, or like he'll throw in, like every now and then he'll throw an REO Speedwagon song into like one of his movies, and I always get excited. It's like, and I know he loves like them, and he loves Styx, but I always get a kick out of it when he throws like REO Speedwagon in there, because I go, yeah man, it's REO Speedwagon. It's such a great, you know, they're a great band to listen to. Like I said, it's one of those I actually just recently started trying to acquire some vinyl for REO Speedwagon, and I got High Infidelity and I got like a greatest hits for them, but I'm trying to get you can tune a piano but you can't tune a fish. I'm trying to get that album because I really want that. So that's a great pick. That's a really great pick. I'm actually pissed that you picked that because I want it. If this was a draft, I would try to steal it. I'd try to trade for that. I trade my next three picks for that pick.
Well, that's why I love doing this show, because of all the different picks and opinions we get. So why don't you go ahead and give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore?
So this one I went with another. This is actually like an artist himself. He did have success in a band and a couple bands, I'm pretty sure. But I mean, definitely known well for one band and then really known for his solo work. But that's Jerry Rafferty. And people might know Jerry Rafferty from either Steeler's Wheel, where they had Stuck in the Middle with You, or Baker Street. Baker Street's probably, that's a solo hit. That's probably one of his biggest hits. But I mean, he also had like Right Down the Line. I mean, he had a lot of good hits. He's a Scottish singer-songwriter. He passed away in 2011. I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame. But I mean, he might be in with Steeler's Wheel. I don't know if Steeler's Wheel is in the Hall of Fame. I didn't look that up. But I will say that he was an incredible artist. Just a great songwriter. I love his voice. I mean, you know, I think when I was younger, like when I was a kid, I would kind of fall asleep listening to, and in Boston, we had a radio station, it was called Magic 106.7. It was kind of like a soft rock station. And I used to hear Baker Street like every single night. It must have been like their 8 o'clock song or their 10 o'clock song or whatever. And I would hear it every single night. And just the saxophone part at the beginning was just so classic, and just, it's just it brings you back to like your youth. And every time I hear Jerry Rafferty stuff, he brings me back. Like he automatically transports me back to being like a kid again. And I just love listening to him and everything that the guy makes. So another guy that if you haven't had a chance to listen to him, because he's just an incredible, I feel very underrated, incredible songwriter, singer-songwriter at a time when there was singer-songwriters. And yeah, I mean, it's a shame. When he passed away, I was like, oh, that sucks. I feel it's kind of like just another nail in the coffin, you know, like another toothpick, as Janice Soprano once said. So,
yeah, this is another guy I'm not too familiar with. I mean, obviously I know Baker Street because I love that song. I love hearing it on the radio, and it's also on the Grand Theft Auto 5 in there on the rock station there. So I love listening to it when I'm on them if I ever get on a mission. And I do know he had Stuck in the Middle with You as part of Steeler's Wheel, which was featured in Reservoir Dogs.
Yep.
And of course, most know that Baker Street kind of went big on the Yacht Rock station, which of course PTB knows that we love the Yacht Rock here. So but yeah, that's definitely another great good choice. And yeah, it doesn't look like he's in the Hall of Fame. I know he had kind of a interesting kind of, you know, distinction about being a musician in the business. So I don't know if that's kind of kept him out of it, but he's definitely one that, like you said, for everything he did accomplish by himself and with at least with Steeler's Wheel, that he should get that nod. So I definitely agree with that. Okay, well, I will go ahead and give my next pick here. This one, this might be one of those the weirdest choices I've ever done, and I've had some weird ones over the course of this this podcast, especially if you go back and look. But I feel like this artist has, it's hard to explain, but I almost feel like she originally was set up to fail at first, but she has gone on to really carve out a little niche, not so much in the music business, but even more so as an actress. And again, this may be a very weird pick, but I'm actually going with Mandy Moore. Okay. You know, when she came out late 99 2000, as part of the whole when the bubblegum pop really starting to hit big, you know, it was, she came in a time when Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera were obviously, you know, becoming mega stars, and you know, her and Jessica Simpson, a couple of other ladies were kind of getting lost in the shuffle, and she seemed like another just kind of cookie cutter pop princess that you would see at the time. But like I said, she would then kind of transition out of that and go into film, and actually kind of, like I said, carved out a little good little niche for herself as an actress. Obviously, to me, she'll always now be remembered as Rapunzel in Tangled, obviously being the Disney fan that I am. But she's had a couple of other, you know, good little appearances in films. You know, she was in Walk to Remember. That was, you know, really like her biggest role to date besides Tangled. She was also in other films like 47 Meters Down, that Midway, Because I Said So, etc. So I think it was really a good for her that she kind of got away from kind of being similar to everybody else in the early part of the 2000s, and went on to just be to basically just be herself. And she's now, I mean, she still does a few performances here and there, but I think she'll always be more known as an actress as opposed to just a musician. Again, I know that's a very kind of off the wall pick there. But I definitely think she, in a time when she could have just been swallowed up by the pop expansion in the early 2000s, she went on to have herself a really good little career. So I definitely think she deserves some credit. So was there anything else you wanted to say about me anymore?
No, I mean, I agree with that. I feel like she falls into that category where, and I'll tell you, this is kind of, I actually do have an honorable mention, and I'll talk more about it in that, but where she's probably like the fourth or fifth, as you call, what'd you call them? Bubblegum pop singers. I would say that,
yeah,
that's probably where that's a, probably an accurate description of where she would fall. You know, you had Christina Aguilera, you had Britney Spears, but like you said, you had Jessica Simpson, you had, I'm trying to think who else would have been in there. I mean, you could even say things like Beyonce or Destiny's Child and Rihanna and shit like that. I mean, I feel like she's probably on the list at 4, 5, 6, 7. She's not high up. So I think that that's perfectly within your right to say, and I agree with you completely on that. You know, she was born in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is kind of cool. Like, Nashua's own Mandy Moore. Don't forget that she's on This Is Us. And, or is this Us? This Is Us is over now, I think, right? I think it just ended this year. So, I mean, no longer on This Is Us. But, I mean, that was huge. Like, she was a big deal for that. So, and, yeah, I mean, her acting chops have been very good, I think, as far as the movies that she's done. She also did, what was that weird movie she did that was like Saved? Did you ever see Saved? That's a great movie. It's like a satirical black comedy, but it's great. It's all about, you know, like Christians and, you know, that's great. I mean, I was pulling up her Wikipedia as you were talking about her, and she was raised Catholic and she stopped practicing. I always love that. I love when I read that people were raised Catholic or raised Christian or raised Jewish or raised whatever, and then they're like, yeah, I just gave up, stopped practicing, because it just makes me laugh. But no, I agree with that. I think it's funny because her current husband is a singer. She was originally, you know, she was married to Ryan Adams, who was, obviously a notable singer. So she's trying to stay within that musical realm, but she's an actress. I would say she's an actress. I'd give you that she is an underrated musical talent, but she transitioned fairly well, I would say, into the realm of in movies. So congratulations. I like that. No, I like that pick. That's a great pick.
Yeah, I am happy with that one. So, all right, well, let's. We each got one pick, one entry left on our Mount Rushmore. So, why don't you give yours first?
So, my last pick is Everclear, and that's a band, the Portland, Oregon. They started out in 1991, and I think most people probably owned So Much for the Afterglow. I know I did. I mean, that was like the big album. That was their biggest commercial hit album. That's the stuff where I Will Buy You a New Life, Father of Mine, even So Much for the Afterglow. That was kind of a hit for them. I love them. I think they kind of, obviously forming in 1991, they started right when alternative rock was like a thing. I feel that they kind of get the sad distinction of just being like another one of the bands, you know, like another, oh, here's another band like Marcy Playground and, you know, like just another one of those bands that everybody, well, here's another one. And obviously, you know, coming from growing up in that era, listening to grunge, listening to alternative music. Yeah, I loved them a lot. I feel like most people would probably consider them a one or two hit wonder. But again, they're another one where like their entire catalog of music is just, it's fun to listen to. It's a good sound. It's a distinct sound. I love them a lot. I think that, that they, I don't think they have like a ton of like, they don't influence a ton of people, but they have a lot of influences of music that you can kind of hear within them. They have things like the Beatles, the Beach Boys, Bruce Springsteen, Tom Petty, the Green Day, like the Replacements, you can listen to these bands and hear a lot of their songs in that and a lot of that. So I like them. I would recommend anybody give them a try. I think So Much for the Afterglow, like I said, is a great experimental sound for them as far as just becoming like a commercial wide hit, and I feel like that's why they made that, so that people could hear them. But I mean, you listen to like some of their other stuff, other albums like Sparkle and Fade or their first one, World of Noise. I mean, that's just, it is good stuff. It really is. So recommend it. If anybody out there, listen to them. And I know every kid who's ever had a problem with either of his parents will find something in Father of Mine. So, you know, that's just, it's a great song. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I remember, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, they were all over the place on MTV. And I saw them a lot with their videos. Like you said, I Will Buy You a New Life, Father of Mine, mm-hmm. a wonderful AM radio, which I also, of course, during that time used to collect the, for those that remember the Now That's What I Call Music series. Mm-hmm. And those songs were all on it, were all on them. So, and yeah, they did kind of have a somewhat similar sound almost to like a Marcy Playground or to like a Fastball or the, okay. you know, those random bands that had like, you know, the one or two big hits and then just kind of unfortunately faded into obscurity. So, I think they're another band that I think when you look back on that time frame, you kind of remember them a little bit more fondly. So I'm definitely with you on that one. All right. Well, I will go ahead and give my last pick. And again, this may be a kind of a bit of a weird one, but given, you know, when they, around the time that they came, you know, during that early, you know, 90s when the grunge really took over and everyone was so focused on Nirvana, you had over on the other side kind of just, you know, doing their own little thing, a little band called Pearl Jam. And obviously they would carve themselves out a great niche, you know, great career, many great hits, you know, Alive, Even Flow, Jeremy, you know, just so many incredible hits. But I always felt that they were considered like number two behind Nirvana. When you talk about all the grunge bands that came out during that time, there's another band from that same period that I have as an honorable mention, and actually two of them as honorable mentions we'll get to in a minute. But I don't think you can definitely discount the impact that Pearl Jam had on the music business just as much as Nirvana. And if anything, I mean obviously nobody, you don't want to say that Kurt Cobain passing away was a good thing, because it certainly wasn't, but with him passing away, Nirvana, you know, going under, you know, that let Pearl Jam go on to have a more lengthier run, and they're still doing it to this day. So I definitely think that when you look back at the grunge movement that came out of the early 90s, that Pearl Jam definitely belongs on that same level as Nirvana in terms of historical significance to the music business. I don't know, Keith, if you agree with me on that sentiment or not.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I'm pretty sure that one of the bands that you say in the honorable mention is my one honorable mention band. I mean, Pearl Jam's, I love them. I've seen them. God, I think I've seen them like three or four times. It's my friend Chris's like favorite band. And I mean, they had a distinct sound. They're obviously a lot higher up on my list of bands, I think. And that could very well just be because that was the genre of music I listened to, and that was the generation I grew up in and everything. But I mean, I could see the argument, or at least the debate, where Nirvana really got the nod. You know, they are the ones that got the gold ring, so to speak, as far as the whole Seattle sound or the grunge sound. Probably more, I don't want to say undeserving. I think where everybody loves Kurt Cobain and loves his songwriting, I feel like Eddie Vedder is really a poet. Like, and I know that's such a cheesy thing to say, and it's going to sound so crazy because one of my overrated bands is about a poet who joins a band, basically. But in this case, I feel like it's true. I mean, you listen to the lyrics of Black, and that's a story. And that's coming directly from the guy's heart, you know? And so I would say that's, he's a poet that belongs in a band. And, so that's where, I mean, and shit, I'll go ahead and I'll give him that. I'll say he's a singer-songwriter. You know, I know it's a band, but I think that Eddie Vedder is a singer-songwriter, you know, and he fit well with the music that, I mean, I think, what was the story that their first, I think that Stone Gossard sent him the tape, and then he sent it back, and he was like, oh my God, these are all the lyrics that fit with all the songs you wrote. I mean, that's just like, that's fate right there, you know, that all the songs that he wrote the lyrics that he wrote to those songs fit with the music that the band itself was writing. So, yeah, no, I like that. I love that. I love Pearl Jam. I do. I mean, their first album is like one of the greatest albums of all time, I feel like. 10. That's like one of the greatest albums. It's a perfect 10, no pun intended.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I guess the story was that Vedder got the demo tape and he listened to it just before going surfing of all things when when he thought of the lyrics and recorded them. So,
yeah. It's a great story.
That is. So, all right, well, that will conclude both our main lists, but now let's go through and talk about any album mentions if we have any. I know you said you have at least one.
I did, and it's kind of it was a last minute, and it was actually because a conversation I was having with my brother before you and I recorded, and I said, all right, I'll put them on. And that's Soundgarden, and hear me out. It's a lot of it has to do with they're not the first, they're not the second, they're probably not even the third, maybe the fourth band that you think of. If I was to say to you, tell me some of those Seattle style grunge bands that you listen to. In my opinion, I think it probably goes Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots, and then maybe Soundgarden. But I think a lot of other people would probably put another band in front of them, which is a crime. I mean, Chris Cornell is RIP, probably one of the best frontmen of any friggin' band. I mean, he was phenomenal with Soundgarden. He was phenomenal in Audioslave. I mean, songs that he recorded like just solo were just unbelievable. I mean, like the world seriously lost like one of the greatest musicians when he passed away in 2017. And it's a shame that we lost him because God, the amount of music he would have been probably putting out like in the last 5 years, 6 years would have been amazing. But it just itself though, Soundgarden, I feel like it's just when I think of like underrated, I they're a band's band. I mean, if you look at like, if you were to look at the list of the list of bands that have been influenced by them, it's crazy. And I think that they just had an awesome sound, really, really kind of a different sound as far as just, you know, not hitting so much of the angst, the angry youth angst of America at the time, but like just some good rock and roll, you know, like really good rock and roll is all their stuff. And I mean, what, Super Unknown, I mean, that's such a friggin' good album. I remember just driving around listening to that album, just rocking out on it. So but yeah, I don't think that I almost want to say that maybe even Audioslave kind of overshadowed Soundgarden when you think of like Chris Cornell, because I think now most people really think of him from Audioslave, and that's just because that was the most recent stuff that he did, you know. But still, I mean, Soundgarden, fantastic. I think that they, in my opinion, they probably should be number one as far as like the Seattle grunge scene, because their music, I think, is far better than Nirvana's. And I'll be honest, the Foo Fighters are my favorite band ever. And when you were talking about Kurt Cobain dying, yeah, it was a tragedy, but while it allowed Pearl Jam to kind of leap to the forefront of grunge, it allowed Dave Grohl to create the Foo Fighters, which thank the Lords, thank the gods for the Foo Fighters, because they were the last, and even still, I mean, their most recent album I listened to, and it's fantastic. They're like the last rock group. They really are. And, you know, that's kind of, that came from that unfortunate suicide that, you know, of Kurt Cobain. So, but in my opinion, I think Soundgarden is a far superior grunge band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually had Soundgarden as an honorable mention as well. I mean, yeah, they had a lot of, you know, really big impact. I mean, Black Hole Sun was like one of those, like, you know, when you talk about the grunge songs of the 90s, that's one of the first ones that's always gets talked about. And like I said, Chris Cornell would go on to have a great, you know, run with Audioslave. And you mentioned songs from Marvel films. One of my favorite songs from one of the Marvel films was Soundgarden's Live to Rise from the Avengers. Mm-hmm. That played during the credits. I love that song. I mm-hmm. love it so much. And like you say, yeah, it was really tragic when Cornell passed away when he did. And that was really, that was a rough stretch there, because not long after he passed away was when Chester Bennington passed away, passed away as well.
Yep.
So, in the span of like 2-3 months, two great singers, left us way too soon. So, it was definitely unfortunate. But yes, I definitely agree on Soundgarden. And another kind of band from that same period, from that same time frame, kind of on the same, almost the same vein as Soundgarden, Alice in Chains as well.
Yes.
Like you said, when you think the grunge movement, you think Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and STP. And then you kind of have Alice in Chains and Soundgarden on the back burner. But again, I think they definitely deserve some credit as well. I mean, shit, the ECW fans know Man in the Box is Tommy Dreamer's theme song. So you definitely got to, definitely have that. A couple of other ones I have here. I mentioned Foreigner when talking about REO Speedwagon, but I do think Foreigner as well doesn't quite get enough credit for some of the great songs they've had throughout their career. So I definitely think they deserve a mention. Another kind of English band that deserves, I think, a little love, the Kinks.
Sure.
They've had some good songs. You Really Got Me, Lola. Again, I think one of those British bands that you don't think a lot about, just because there have been so many to come from that country. So, I mean, they were inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1990. So, they definitely had a great little run that doesn't get talked about enough. Another kind of interesting band. I know I kind of brought these guys up before we came on the air, but System of a Down, a more modern band. They had a couple of good hits in the mid 2000s. Definitely kind of one of the, they're a band that I think you have to have a certain taste to enjoy their music, but I think they definitely, deserve a little love. And then the last band I had was Blue Oyster Cult. Obviously, they will forever be remembered as, for the SNL skit of Christopher Walken saying that he needs more cowbell. But they're a really great band. I mean, they're obviously, they'll always, be remembered for Don't Fear the Reaper. But they do have a lot of other big hits as well. And I think they're definitely a band that deserves to be remembered a lot more than just for a simple SNL skit. So, those are the ones I had on my honorable mentions. Did you have anything else to say about any of those bands?
I mean, I agree with all of those. I was trying to remember System of a Down earlier. That's really funny. I was like, it's the band with the guy that's Armenian. What's his name? And Serge Turkanian. And I went, that's the guy. Yeah. No, they were the one. I was trying to think of a band when I was talking about sound, like bands with my brother, and it was System of a Down. Alice in Chains was the one I was going to say is the number four band you think of when you think of grunge. But, Alice in Chains is great. God, I remember when I was 16 and I was working at McDonald's and all during the summer, I would drive to work and I would, which I was borrowing like my brother's car to like go to work. And he had like Alice in Chains. I want to say it was the, was it flies in the, no, Dirt or Jar of Flies. One of them he had like in his car and I would listen to that CD. And it just, every time I hear anything from those, it brings me back to like another one that just immediately transports me back to my youth of like getting up early on like a Saturday morning, having to go to make like Egg McMuffins for people. So, that's good stuff, man. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right, well, that will conclude this first half here. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take an intermission, in essence. When we come back, we are going to flip things around and talk about some musicians and bands that we think are overrated. Mm-hmm. This, of course, is Making Mount Rushmore on the PTB Pop Experience, and we will see you on the other side of this break. I forgot. And we're back on Making Mount Rushmore here on the Palp Experience. I am Steve Riddle along with Keith Langston. We are discussing underrated and overrated musicians and bands. In our first half, we talked about musicians and bands who we thought were underrated. And now for this half, we're going to turn it around and talk about musicians and bands that we think are overrated. Basically, bands that get so much love and attention that for whatever reason, for what we feel is, you know, it could be unwarranted or just think they're, you know, overhyped or whatever. And we got some interesting picks on here, so I'm going to go ahead and kick off with my first pick. And again, this might be a bit of a controversial one, and I know me personally, I'm kind of 50-50 on them in terms of if they're overrated or not, but I do know there is a group of people that do believe they are overrated. And that is, of course, Led Zeppelin. Obviously they've had, you know, a lot of great hits throughout throughout their career, throughout, you know, their time on, you know, when they performed. You know, they obviously went some, when, who was it? Was it, it was, what was it? After, you know, John Bonham, their drummer, passed away, they decided they weren't going to continue on. They've obviously done separate, you know, side projects here and there, but as a, you know, group, they've not come together. You do wonder how their career would have gone had he, had Bonham not passed away and they continued to make music. Like I say, you still hear them all the time on the radio. They've, like I said, a lot of big hits, but I do see the argument why some people would find them, would definitely find them overrated. Again, me, I'm kind of 50-50 on that. I do think they've had a lot of great hits that they've, and they definitely deserve a lot of the love they've got, but I do, but I can see, why, again, why I think maybe some of it is not warranted just because of maybe because of what could have been with them. So, Keith, do you have anything else to say about Led Zeppelin?
No, I mean, that's a controversial pick, I feel like. But I can understand. I can see where you're coming from with it. I know a lot of people who do find them to be overrated as well. You know what? I wouldn't say that. Actually, now that I think of it, that's not a controversial pick, because I think most people consider them, or most lists put them as like the greatest band of all time. So that's a good question. They are overrated because I don't know if they're the greatest band of all time. You know, I mean, there's so many friggin' bands. They are very, yes, they are very influential for their music. They're very influential for the style and their sound, and what they put out and what they produced. But they kind of have, and maybe you can understand, maybe you can agree, or at least see where I'm coming from. They have that kind of U2 air about them where they feel like that they're bigger than being a band, you know, where they're like, oh, we're doing things. It just, at least that's how I felt they were back in like their heyday. Not really much anymore. I don't think anybody really gives a shit what they say anymore. But I know people consider Jimmy Page to be like one of the greatest guitarists of all time. And I'm like, why? Because he played with a double guitar. Like, you know, when you look at other guitarists and everything, you go, okay. But yeah, I mean, I might agree with you on that, only in the fact that I don't think they deserve to be the number one band of all time. And most lists, I think, put them as the number one band of all time. So yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
overrated just specifically because of where they come in the grand scheme of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, you know, I think it's more just, you know, what would they have been had they not had, like I said, not had John Bonham not passed away and they had mm-hmm. been able to go continue on into the 80s, how yeah. they would have stacked up with like the hair, with all the hair bands and all that, and all those bands. So that would,
yeah,
have
like, would they have been able to transition as well as some of the other bands that kind of, like AC/DC, for instance. Like, I feel like AC/DC hung in there with bands from the 70s and then bands in the 80s and then even bands into the 90s, you know? Mm-hmm. So I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, why don't you give us your first entry on your Mount Rushmore of overrated musicians and or bands?
So, all right. While I was telling you, while I was singing the praises of one Eddie Vedder for being a poet that joined a band, here's a band that had a poet as their front man that I feel like is just, if I never hear them ever again, it'll be too soon. And that is The Doors. I am not a fan of Jim Morrison. I think Jim Morrison, the best thing about Jim Morrison was that Family Guy episode where Peter Griffin played Jim Morrison and he farted into his leather pants and it just created this big bubble. I've never really liked the Doors. I've never really liked Jim Morrison. To be honest, I don't even think I could name another person in the band. I almost feel bad that Val Kilmer's career is like, he's either known for playing Jim Morrison or known for playing like one of the unpopular Batman. It just sucks. Like, it's a shame. I never thought anything of it. He's a poet. He should have wrote his poetry like Dylan Thomas and then called it a day, you know, because I feel like it's a lot of just, and their sound is just, it's very repetitive music. So it's just, I just never, no, no, thank you. Get away from me.
Yeah, they're an interesting group because you know, they came in, you know, during the 60s when they were, you know, considered one of the big faces of like the counterculture that came at that's around that time with, like, you know, Hendrix and Joplin and you know, all those other artists that came in during the late 60s, and then you know, then Morrison tragically passed away when he did and of course was part of the infamous 27 Club with Hendrix and Joplin, and I think that's kind of what you know, kind of took them to at least that next level. In fact, there's a quote here from Henry Rollins on their Wikipedia page. It says, quote, "Morrison's passing stamped the Doors with a seal of legend and immortality. There was no opportunity for the band to go into the 70s intact. Perhaps that's a good thing. I can't imagine the Doors in the era of disco." Mm-hmm. And it, again, they're another kind of similar to Led Zeppelin. What would have happened if Morrison had not passed away and they had continued on into the 70s? And maybe even into the 80s, you know, how would their, you know, would their sound have, you know, continued to last throughout that period? So I can see why some would find them overrated. I think, yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, I think they're one of those bands that you just have to, you just have to be a fan of that particular type of style and music that they play. So, again, they're not a band I've listened to a ton, so I don't have a dog in the fight, but but I can see why you would find them overrated. So, all right, well, I'm gonna go ahead and pick my next entry. And while I had a female artist on my underrated with Mandy Moore, I do have one here on my overrated in that she's just one I don't understand. I mean, I get why she's popular, but I just, you know, for what, I just don't myself see why. And especially because of, you know, recent events that's happened with her, and that's Taylor Swift. She came in, you know, in the late part of the 2000s, you know, this new kind of young up and coming country singer. You know, she seemed like just, you know, another one of those, like, you know, girl next door type of performers. But then as the 2010s dawned, she, you know, kind of revamped her image into this like bad girl, you know, pop star with some of the songs that she had. And I bring up Modern Day because for those that remember when it was announced she was finally going back on tour after the hiatus from the pandemic, there was a whole kerfluffle with Ticketmaster and everything. And that's, you know, the fact that the U.S. government has actually got investigated into the company because of it. So it's just really insane to me that of all, because, I mean, we've all dealt with Ticketmaster over the years, and we know that they've had a habit of you know, gouging prices. I mean, me working with the with the Caesars Entertainment at the box office, we partner with Ticketmaster in our sales of our shows. So I hear about it all the time from guests, how they don't like work. Yeah. They don't like having to go to Ticketmaster. But it's just funny how of all the artists that this happened to, it was her. So again, I know she's, you know, I think she's another one that's, I think the fame has really kind of gotten to her head almost, in that she thinks she's, you know, she's bigger than she really is. And again, it's just kind of disheartening almost to see, like I said, what she started out as when she first came on the scene as this, you know, she seemed like such a nice girl. This, like I said, the girl next door, and to kind of see this, this evolution, or maybe de-evolution throughout the last decade or so, has been kind of has been a bit of a not just disheartening. So I think she's definitely extremely overrated in terms of what she's brought to the music business. And I know you actually had her as one of your honorable mentions.
I did. And everything you said is completely 100% accurate. I also want to just say that one of the other things is the ridiculous amount of songs that she writes about breaking up with people is just like silly. And at this point, does anybody even care anymore? Like, what guy is going to want to date Taylor Swift to know that he's just going to then become a song in her next catalog? It's just, and the amount of money that people are paying to go see her freaking show, like, give me a break. She sings fucking pop songs. I mean, she's, it's ridiculous. It's obnoxious. You're right. She is 100% bought into her bullshit. Very similar to Led Zeppelin. I mean, Jesus, did you pick two friggin' bands right off the bat who bought into their bullshit 100%? If you put U2 on that list, I'm gonna friggin' have a stroke, because I'm gonna be like, oh my god, does Steve know overrated bands? Like, you have some some gears to grind. But no, I mean, I think that she's just, I had her as an honorable mention mostly because the four bands I put on my Mount Rushmore are just, I have problems with. But yeah, she's absolutely 1,000%. She's on there. She's so overrated. I know every girl that loves her, I just want to vomit when I hear them talking about Taylor Swift. I'm like, oh God, when you get to be like 30, you're going to realize how stupid her songs are. So yeah, no, I agree completely. And, not controversial. That is not controversial. Steve,
I don't... Yeah, no, I don't get it. I just don't get it. All right, well, why don't you go ahead and give us your next entry on your Mount Rushmore of overrated musicians or bands.
Yes. Now, I hope you allow me to do this, because it has to do with a particular era of a band, and that is the Peter Gabriel era of Genesis. Now I am without a doubt one of the biggest Phil Collins fans out there. I think that Phil Collins is a international treasure, and he should be valued as much as that. And I don't feel like he is at all. I should have put him as my number one underrated, but everybody freaking loves Phil Collins. So it's like, you know, but he doesn't get the love and appreciation from the critics, I feel like, because everybody talks about Peter Gabriel and Genesis. Peter Gabriel's Genesis music is fucking terrible. Like, it's awful. I mean, once Peter Gabriel left and Phil Collins took over, Genesis became a great band, and like a really great band. And I think that Peter Gabriel was holding them back the whole time. And everybody talked. And that's the thing, is that Genesis and Peter Gabriel are both in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but Phil Collins is not in by himself, which is a crime against humanity. And I will be saying that, like, I need to do like, the petitions there at like, change.org to get Phil Collins put into, I want Phil Collins to be carved on the actual Mount Rushmore. That's how much I think he's a treasure. But, Peter Gabriel, yeah, Genesis, they didn't have any hits really, during his era. I mean, you go through and you look at their discography, it sucks. Like, their songs just are not that great. They're not that catchy. They're not that commercial. Real just like, I guess, indie sound for them, or just like, you know, kind of, I don't know. I never liked it. Like I said, I think once Peter Gabriel left and went sledgehammering down Salisbury Hill, I think that Genesis moved into a far better direction with Phil Collins at the helm. So yeah, I put Genesis on that list, but only the Peter Gabriel era.
Right. Yeah. I've not heard a ton of Genesis with Peter Gabriel. I know most of their stuff with Phil Collins, and it's kind of funny because, you know, after Gabriel left, he did go on to have a good solo career. I mean, like you said, you know, he had a lot of big hits in the 80s, you know, Sledgehammer, Shock the Monkey, Big Time, In Your Eyes. He really actually benefited from MTV starting up in the mid 80s. Because his videos were just so out there.
Yes.
That they, you know, were just so unique for the time. And then once Phil Collins took over, for Genesis, I think, like you said, they definitely found their stride as well. And it's kind of funny to think about. I was reading up here. Apparently, after Gabriel left, they auditioned 400 singers to take over his spot before eventually just having Collins take over. And he was, and apparently Collins was reluctant to do so, but you know, thankfully, I think he made the right decision. So
seriously, is Peter Gabriel's biggest accomplishment is that they used his song for the WrestleMania 22 theme song? Was like 30 years after it was a hit. I mean, it was like Big Time. Big Time was a hit in like 1982. I don't like that music, pal. Get that Peter Gabriel guy.
And it's funny because it's like that's like a song that you would think would not fit as a WrestleMania theme song, but for whatever reason at that time it did. So
Big Time at the Rosemont Horizon. such a weird pick.
It is. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and give my next entry. And again, this might be another controversial one, because obviously this band is, I think, will forever be known for their gimmick and their characters, which I think kind of overshadows like them as a band. And even though they have had a couple big hits, and that's Kiss. Obviously, you know, they're all about the gimmick of with the makeup and the big, you know, productions and, you know, Gene Simmons with his, you know, big tongue and everything. But I mean, really, and like I said, they've had a couple of good songs. I mean, obviously, you know, Rock and Roll All Night is, you know, an iconic song. And, you know, even when they, you know, and there's a couple of other ones, and then, you know, they went through the whole thing on MTV when they came out without the makeup for the first time, and had that little kind of brief period in the 80s, and then they came back in the 90s, and they've had their split ups and everything. I just feel like, you know, they are Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. They're considered one of the greatest of all time. But again, I think it's just a lot more for just their gimmick, as opposed to their actual music, that I think is why they get such great such recognition as one of the greatest. And again, this might be a bit of a controversial take. That's just how I feel about it. So, Keith, did you have any thing about Kiss?
I would say Kiss is probably the closest you're going to find to a professional wrestling band, and just because. They're all about the entertainment, and that really is. I mean, and I know that that's like, if I ever saw Paul Stanley or Gene Simmons or Ace Frehley, I probably would not say that to their face, because I'm sure they would be pissed. I mean, you're right. It was the precursor. Do you remember GWAR? And like GWAR, like where they were, the guy was wearing like, it was like the precursor to GWAR. I don't know if you know them. They were like, I don't know. They always showed up on Views About It, that band. But no, Kiss, I mean, yeah, they had good music. I don't think anybody ever took them seriously, though, as like an actual musical act, because of just how over the top they were. But yeah, I think that a lot of people will say that they're like a significant band in the history of rock and roll. I probably would disagree with that. Their music's good, but yeah, they're way more known for all of their theatrics and their merchandising. And I mean, I won't get a Kiss coffin when I die, because I'm going to be cremated, but I would probably go in a Kiss urn, which I'm sure is available as well. So I think that I agree with you on that, that they're just kind of that, they're an over the top band, and they're mostly known for their merchandising and their theatrics and just entertainment. So I would agree with you on that. That's a solid pick, I think.
Well, if you remember, we did have in WCW the Kiss Demon.
We did have a wrestler.
I mean, and the fact that they went through the trouble to bring Kiss in to perform on Nitro, and they got, the band actually got $500,000 for that one night they performed one song, and that was God of Thunder, and it ended up being like one of the lowest rated segments in the history of Nitro. So,
And to my knowledge, I don't think they've ever done anything with the WWE. So, I mean, Paul Stanley must have a grudge against Vince McMahon for some reason.
Well, I think Bischoff wanted to do like a big New Year's Eve.
He did. Bischoff
paper with them, but that was. But then, of course, they. But then he got fired, and then they got axed. So
yeah, but it is funny. Like for some reason. Yeah, like, I don't know why, but Eric Bischoff was, like, obsessed with Kiss. Like, hey, man, let's hang out with Kiss. You know, okay.
All right, well, why don't you go ahead and give us the next entry on your Mount Rushmore?
Okay, I'm pretty sure most people would consider this a universal pick, and that's just simply John Mayer. While I was reading... doing some research on like overrated bands. I came across Dave Matthews a couple of times and I was like, nah, Dave Matthews is not overrated. I think Dave Matthews is rated just fine. But his like spiritual successor is John Mayer, and good Christ, is John Mayer friggin' overrated? I mean, I don't know where he thinks, like, if I ran into John Mayer, I would just look at him and I go, two questions. First of all, how dare you? And secondly, where do you get off? Like, it's just, he thinks he's like, he's another guy that just buys into his bullshit of being like this amazing, like, singer songwriter, like, just saving souls on his fucking stage on the guitar. Like, give me a break, John Mayer. Like, he's another one who's just more interested in how can I make shit to get chicks to have sex with me? It's just so obnoxious. I've never really liked John Mayer. I've never liked any of his music. He's just way too, like, just, forgive me for saying, like, pussy music. I don't know. It's just, like, just guys that listen to John Mayer, like, you just want to slap them silly, you know? And I listen to Phil Collins. I mean, people might say Phil Collins is kind of like pussy music, but you know what? Whatever. I don't have a problem with that. I listen to, like, easy going soft rock. I love 80s bands, like 80s good bands like REO Speedwagon and Boston, and Boston's kind of a rock band, but like you know, the Cars and all that kind of stuff. I can't stomach John Mayer. I just hate him. I hate everything about him. There you go.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that one. It's funny you mentioned Dave Matthews Band, because when I first heard John Mayer for the first time with No Such Thing, I thought he sounds a lot like Dave Matthews, to the point that I thought it was Dave Matthews. And I looked and I was like, wait a minute, it's a different guy. It's just funny because that was around the same time, of course, that, you know, Creed was hot, and everyone, you know, was accusing Scott Stapp of sounding too much like Eddie Vedder. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you have the same thing here, but I didn't hear any backlash of John Mayer about it. But anyway, but yeah, I've never liked him either. I cannot stand Your Body is a Wonderland. That's a terrible song. And it was all over the place on MTV when it came out. I was just so, it's like, I just couldn't deal with it. And I know he's had some, you know, in the last couple of years, he's had some personal issues that's, you know, he's had to deal with, but you know, again, it's just one of those things where it's just like, he's a guy that you either, you know, I agree with you. He's definitely one that buys into the hype so hard, similar to like a Taylor Swift that, I just don't see it. So.
And they dated. So that's just supposed to show you. Maybe they should get together. What's that? Oh, is it Shania Twain? And oh God, no, who's like the country band that's like the country singers that are like married? I know there's a bunch of them, but there's like, I think like it's, I can't remember.
Faith Hill and Tim McGraw, I think.
Yeah, Faith Hill and Tim McGraw, and they should just get married and then just sing bad songs to each other.
Well, maybe that's where she got the inspiration for all her breakup songs, was when they broke up. So.
Well, you know, it's really, if we can cut back to Taylor Swift for a second, just because we're like, so many people gave Miley Cyrus like such a hard time. Because when she kind of went a little, you know, when she got rid of the Hannah Montana and kind of went a little wild, you know, but Miley Cyrus was only in like one relationship, I think, for the majority of her time after she dumped Hannah Montana. And that was with Liam Hemsworth.
Hemsworth, yeah.
I mean, hasn't Taylor Swift dated like half of Hollywood at this point? And I understand, and that's why I'm saying, like, why would guys want to date her? She's clearly just dating guys so that they can dump her. And then she can write, like, a song about how they hurt her feelings. I mean, she's got to be a nightmare to deal with. A nightmare. I mean, just a total nightmare as a person to deal with, as Taylor Swift. And she, so it makes sense that she was with John Mayer, because he's a total nightmare to deal with as well. So, anyway, moving on.
Yes. All right, well, we each have one entry left on our Mount Rushmore, so I will go ahead and give my first. And actually, it's ironic you mentioned Miley Cyrus, because she's the last one on my list.
Miley, nice.
Well, like I said, again, you know, she, you know, got, you know, started big, you know, with the whole, with the Hannah Montana thing. And, you know, she, it's kind of funny because she gave, you know, Billy Ray some, a second career, because, you know, he had, you know, his, you know, big run in the early 90s with Achy Breaky Heart. And then he kind of, you know, disappeared off the earth before coming back for, to help her out. And then after, you know, she kind of got away from Disney and Hannah Montana and just, you know, became a big pop, you know, the big pop star. And again, she's another one that I think just bought into the hype so much that she just, you know, it just overcame her. And I mean, that period of the mid to like the 2010s, she was just an absolute train wreck with everything. I mean, just, you know, the songs were like, were just kind of like, you know, just so grating. I mean, freaking, I mean, I remember, you know, freaking Wrecking Ball was just such a, I mean, there's a reason why it's like one of the most hated videos on YouTube, just because it was so insane. And then she had the thing with on the Video Music Awards with Robin Thicke. That was such a big, you know, controversial thing. And it seems like nowadays she's kind of gotten her gotten things back on track a little bit, and she's not as, you know, wild and out there as she was back then. But yeah, she's just another one that really, I think, like a lot of these other artists we talk about, they buy into the, you know, when you got, you know, so many people telling you how great you are, you're, you know, just how, you know, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know, and you're the, especially that young, it, you know, it gets, you know, it affects you, you know, in a bad way. And it's just, it's just really unfortunate that, you know, you, as it's funny, you know, we, you know, you always hear about, you know, these, you know, artists that, you know, go crazy and like just, you know, have these breakdowns in public. And, you know, and yeah, it's like, we do joke about it and everything, but at the same time, you kind of had to think to yourself, well, they are, you know, human beings as well. And, you know, it's gotta be tough, you know, living that life. You know, I don't think, you know, people like, you know, like normal people like us, I don't know if we would be able to handle it as well as they did. So, to kind of, I know it's kind of, you know, kind of going back around to it, but I do think that she's definitely another one that, you know, bought heavily into the hype and has definitely been, definitely one that I think is definitely, is overrated very much. So, I didn't know if you had anything else to say about Miley Cyrus.
The only thing is, I think it's her album Bangers, because that's the one that has like Wrecking Ball on it. I never laughed as hard as I did when I was one of my friends put Bangers is where I really learned to love Miley Cyrus. Like, he put it as like a Facebook profile thing or something. And I almost fell off. I almost crashed my car. Like, that's how much I was laughing when I read that. I mean, I think it was a tweet, and I shouldn't have been looking at Twitter, but I was. Don't tweet and drive, everybody. I almost crashed my car when I saw that. And I called him immediately, and I was like, are you fucking serious? And he goes, what? I go, you're now telling me that you really fell in love with Miley Cyrus from this album that she made? And he goes, well, it's a great album. And he was trying to defend himself, and I went, there's no defense for this. Just stop. I go, you're talking about friggin' Hannah Montana. You're listening to music that, at the time, you know, it was my ex-wife's niece. I was like, my niece is listening to. He was like, what? You know, he's trying to defend himself. I went, there is no defense. Like, no. I think that she absolutely falls into the category of buying into her own nonsense. And I think that's where you get to that point as an artist, is that you have to make the choice, and you either do buy into it or you don't. And there are some bands, I think, that are mega hit bands that just don't fully buy into their nonsense of being beyond what they are. I give all the credit in the world to singers and songwriters and artists that can write music and put out fantastic albums and just, you know, touch people in different ways and stuff. But yeah, sometimes you just, you look at some people and you go, no, I just, you're a product of just the corporate machine, and I just can't buy into it as much, you know. And I think she falls into that category. So I agree with you on that. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. The corporate, you know, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Mandy Moore, the underrated portions, like how when she started out, she, you know, it looked like she was just going to be another, like, one of those, like, cookie-cutter corporate machine type girls in the vein of Britney and Christina. She went on to, you know, kind of forge her own, like, her own identity. So that's another thing I think with a lot of these artists that we talk about in terms of the overrated is that not only do they buy into their own hype, they, you know, they just, you know, products of the music machine, basically. It's like, and it's kind of unfortunate that that's what the music business has become at this point, because, like, you know, for us that grew up in like grew up in the 70s and 80s, you know, it was all about the music, it was all about, you know, seeing the bands live and seeing them, you know, putting, you know, wanting to get their new CDs. And then, and even into the 90s we kind of had that. It wasn't really until the 2000s and the 2010s when it became more just kind of almost like wash, rinse, repeat a lot with a lot of these these musicians and bands. It's and that's why you don't see a lot of like these artists have the same longevity that some of the bands from like our childhoods have. So it's really unfortunate that the music business has devolved into that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and not that I want to put down a Carrie Underwood or a Kelly Clarkson or something, but I mean, those two were winners of American Idol. How much more corporate America is that? I mean, you know, and not that I want to put down either of them. I think I don't listen to country, but I know that Carrie Underwood's very successful in the country music industry and everything. But when you see like a Kelly Clarkson or a Carrie Underwood, and you say, wow, they didn't even have to. It's kind of like the winner of Tough Enough, to kind of bring this back to wrestling, where it's like they didn't have to, you know, grind it out, and they didn't have to pay their dues, or anybody that won like Last Comic Standing or whatever. I mean, it's just any time that you have like a reality show or a corporate influence, you have to look and you have to say, they're just not a real band, or they're not a real singer, or they're not a real wrestler, or they're not a real comedian, or whatever. I mean, it's just, you have to pay your dues. You have part of becoming a long time and having that longevity is going through the bumps and bruises of being like playing in a basement of a basement of a shitty bar, because you can't even play in the shitty bar. You have to play in the basement of the shitty bar, you know. And that's what gets you to that point where you can write about real heartache and real tragedy that you have to deal with in order to get to where you're at. And so I agree with you, like the corporate monster of just creating the same cookie cutter, like wash, rinse, repeat. It's just, it's so stupid, because none of these bands last more than 5-10 years, if that, because there's nothing to them. They're, you know, you can't start a band with millions of dollars and then expect to produce good quality shit 10 years from now, because you're not living that life that most of these bands lived. You read the story about like how Aerosmith started and how they got to be popular. And I mean, again, it's, you're playing in the basement of a shitty bar to get to and you're chasing down radio DJs to give them your tape or your demo so that they please just play this on the midnight hour. I don't care. Just play it on the radio. And then you hear it, and then you realize that's how the bands became bands. And that's why there's no real music nowadays. It really isn't.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's funny you bring up American Idol. Like, besides Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood, what other winners from that show have gone on to even do anything of importance besides those two?
None of them.
I mean, the only other two from that American Idol, you know, era that have done anything of importance is Jennifer Hudson, though she's done more as an actress
than as a musician.
Yeah, she didn't win, but she's gone on to have a great career as an actress. I mean, she won an Oscar, for God's sakes. And then and then you have Chris Daughtry with his rock band. You know.
Yeah, and he didn't win either, right?
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
So Yeah, but yeah, it's just I apologize, listeners, for we kind of went off the rails there about kind of airing our grievances about the music business,
but this is exactly what this kind of I feel like a show would produce that kind of discussion, because I mean, we're talking about, especially when you're talking about overrated bands, because there's so many bands that buy into their hype, and that's what makes them overrated. Because like you said with Kiss, when it's all about the entertainment value and not the music, that's when I think the band starts to suffer. And I think that just some of the bands listed here, you got Miley Cyrus, you got John Mayer, you got Kiss, you got Taylor Swift. Those are just, I mean, I don't want to say the Doors, they're not on that list, but like, those are just bands who, once they became, I feel like one of my honorable mentions is on that list too. Like, once they became like part of just that like entertainment genre, it just loses all the meaning of what their shit was supposed to be. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do have one entry left on your Mount Rushmore, so why don't you go ahead and give it to us?
I do. This is one that, this is my controversial pick. And my brother's very angry for me for putting this on the list, but it's Sublime, the American punk ska band from Long Beach, California. In my humble opinion, the only reason that this band shows up on people's lists of like one of the greatest is because the lead singer, who I believe is Bradley Knoll, he died. I believe he overdosed. They had a, you know, obviously, they had a really big hit album with their first album, or at least their first commercial album. I just don't like them. I don't like them. I'm not a big ska fan anyway. So, you know, you're never going to hear me talking about the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and shit like that. But I just never could dig into it. I couldn't. But their self-titled album that came out in 96, it's like every single person puts it as like one of the greatest albums of all time. If I never hear them again, this is really for real. If I never hear them again, it'll still be way after. Like, I hate them so much. And I don't know why. It's like such an it's just like how I hate the professional wrestler Nails. Like, I just don't, something about them, every time I hear them, every time I see them, I cringe. And, yeah, I just, Sublime, never liked them. And I think that everybody seriously listens to that solo or that self-titled album from 96, which is their last, it was their last album because he passed away shortly thereafter. I mean, they had What I Got, Santeria, Wrong Way. I mean, yeah, it had a ton of hit singles. I'm not going to discredit that. I just don't like them at all. And I think that, you know, for the most part, they shouldn't be played on the radio anymore. But it seems like we have a rock station, 92.9. It's like our alternative rock station. And then even when we had WBCN, which was a very famous station in Boston, it was like every hour, every day at like 12 o'clock, they played like Santeria. And for some reason, 92.9 does the same thing. It's like they play Santeria, and I have to turn off the radio. I can't listen to it. And I yell at my car when I'm sitting in traffic and they come on, I start yelling at my radio.
I'll be honest. Honestly, no Sublime. I hear What I've Got a couple of times, and I do occasionally hear some of the other stuff like Wrong Way and mm-hmm. and a few other ones. So I don't have as big of a dog in this fight as say you do. but I'll definitely take your word for it. I don't know if you know this. Just kind of looking through their wiki page. Did you know that apparently there's a biofilm that's in development on them?
Oh God. Well, count me out for that. I will not be. There's a good chance if I find out the movie company that's putting it out, I may never even see another movie from that company ever again either. So,
well,
let's hope it's not Disney.
It's Sony.
Oh, good. All right. Well, shit, that sucks because they're still putting out Spider-Man movies. Damn it. All right, I might have to renege on that. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. All right. Well, that will conclude our main list, but now let's quickly just go through some honorable mentions. I'll start with mine first. And it's funny you mentioned U2. I did have them as an honorable mention. Yeah. And I think, again, that's just more for the fact that it's not so much the band, but more Bono. Again, buys too much into his own hype. Yeah. So I definitely would agree with that. I definitely would agree on that one. And it's funny, kind of this, again, a similar vein of like Taylor Swift, Miley Cyrus. You did mention Beyonce. You know, mm-hmm. she, you could tell she was the golden child of Destiny's Child, that she was going to have the great, you know, going to probably have the one with the long career, which she has had. But again, I think she's one that's, I think, you know, a little overrated, with her career. The couple of other kind of, again, these may be a bit controversial, but I do see the arguments for like the Rolling Stones and Guns N' Roses being on the list. Again, kind of, excuse me, all about like the showmanship for a lot of them, particularly for Guns N' Roses. I mean, they had, you know, Appetite for Destruction, but then they've kind of been off the rails since. So I think they're one, I think, that maybe gets tended a little bit overrated, similar to the Rolling Stones. So I think coming around kind of around the same time as the Beatles, mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing. Another kind of interesting choice I had here, more for the fact that I think people just thought they sold out when they did, and that's Green Day. Mm. You know, they obviously, you know, started big in the 90s as this, like, you know, alternative rock band, and then by the mid 2000s with American Idiot, mm-hmm. They kind of saw like a tonal shift for them, and I think that alienated a lot of their fan base. So I can definitely see that. And then another one, kind of the similar vein of John Mayer, the fact that I just never got the appeal of this band, Maroon 5. Mm-hmm. I just cannot stand them again. And they were another band that, like, when they came out, they were like all over MTV. And again, I think the same case, Adam Levine, I think is just another guy that just buys into his hype way too much. So those are some of the other artists and bands I had on my honorable mentions. And I know you had at least one other honorable mention besides Taylor Swift.
I did. I have a couple too that I want to add, if that's okay as well.
Oh yeah.
And again, this is another one where it's a very specific era of this band, and it's I guess you could call them Van Hagar. It's Van Halen after David Lee Roth left. Not the same band, just a completely different band. Put out barely listenable music. I don't know what it was, because Sammy Hagar, hell of a rock guy. He's almost a rock god. Van Halen, rock gods. I don't know what happened when they put Van Halen with Sammy Hagar that they turned into a pop band where they were putting out pop songs. And I mean, to the point that right now is almost nauseating to listen to. And the best thing about right now is when Saturday Night Live spoofed the Right Now video with the Pepsi clear. It was the clear gravy. Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that. That's a great thing. It was a great Saturday Night Live bit where they would do it, because it was when Crystal Clear Pepsi came out, and Saturday Night Live did a Crystal Clear gravy, and it was so awesome. It was like they were just pouring corn syrup on everything, and then they were having like the cast eat the food, and they were playing the Right Now, because I think Right Now is the song playing behind the Crystal Clear Pepsi in the commercial. So yeah, I can't stand Van Hagar, and obviously anything after that. I mean, I don't even consider anything after that for Van Halen. Van Halen for me is before David Lee Roth left. I kind of, while we were talking, I thought of two other people. One of them is, and they're both on my honorable mentions for overrated because of the fact that they're just terrible songwriters, and that's Rihanna and also Lenny Kravitz. I mean, their songwriting capabilities are awful. They're just awful. And I mean, for lyrical, I mean, I know Rihanna doesn't write any of her music, but like, I think Lenny Kravitz writes his music. So his music isn't bad, but it's very repetitive. It's just the same stuff over and over and over again. For example, anything by Lenny Kravitz, listen to, and then listen to Diamonds and this, whatever it is. It's just that she says the same thing, like a diamond shines right like a diamond. She says that 55,000 times. It's insane. I read somebody one time say something that Rihanna's like the greatest writer of our generation, and I went, what? And I felt Carly Simon actually vomit, because I was like, get the hell out of here with that nonsense. So yeah, I would say I would add Rihanna and Lenny Kravitz to that. And oddly enough, I think Lenny Kravitz's most successful song is American Woman, and it's because he didn't write it. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a two interesting ones. Like, I mean, Lenny Kravitz was like so overplayed in like the late 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, between like Fly Away and then, like you yep. said, American Woman. And then the late 2000s and 2010s, Rihanna, again, just all over the place. So, yeah. So some good choices there. And again, interesting choice on Van Halen post David Lee Roth, because I know there are a lot of people that do like Van Hagar, as you called mm-hmm. it. So definitely an interesting couple of choices there. All right, well, that will go ahead and wrap things up here. Some great discussions, mm-hmm. you know, from both the underrated and the overrated, and kind of our little our personal takes on the state of the music business. So you got a little little deep dive analysis that I don't think anybody was expecting. But again, that's what makes these shows so great. So let's go ahead and talk about where everyone can find us on social media and what other shows we've got going on. So Keith, why don't you let us know what you've got going on?
Well, you kind of covered it in the beginning. You can hear me every other week on the North-South Connection with A La Carte with Keithy. Coming up, currently right out now, I would imagine, is I have episode 4, which is with my bestest buddy in the whole wide world, L.A. Chris, where we had a 45-minute discussion on Legos. So if anybody's interested in that, please check it out. Also, yes, I'm on the Cronoso Monthly. I handle whenever that comes out on the North-South Connection. I am constantly on the Pop Video Jukebox Song of the Day on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. And you can follow me on Twitter at Flounder824. Instagram as well as Flounder824. I don't do a ton on Instagram, but I should start really with that because I could post some interesting videos and pictures and things like that. A lot of times on my Instagram now, I'm just posting videos of like vinyl albums that I'm playing that are getting me through my very tough work day. So, you know, if you hear like a little clip of that, you'll be like, oh yeah, look at that. There's a vinyl album Keith bought. So, you know, but check it out. And, that's, you know, any other time you hear me, you can hear me usually all over the North-South Connection or the Place to Be feed. But, and of course, now I'm starting to become overrated myself. I'm forgetting where my roots are. You can hear me every week on GFA Live with PD on his own feed. So, and how about you, Steve?
Well, that's all good. So as for me, you can usually find me over here on this feed, not just with this show, but also the Video Jukebox Song of the Day, which at this point is pretty much just you, me, and Mr. Atherton going through a bunch of great songs with some really good theme weeks we've had. So always fun doing those. And also me and Andy do Pop Goes the Classics along with Miranda, where we're going through all the Disney animated films on a little bit of a brief hiatus, but we should hopefully be back here shortly. So we're about to step into the 2000s with our next film, Fantasia 2000. So looking forward to hitting that decade, because I know those films are not very well received. So we'll see how that turns out. You can also find me over on the PTB Wrestling feed with Extreme Resurrection. Myself and our buddy James Grunberg, we're going through ECW, WWE's version from 06 to 2010. We are currently into coming out of Judgment Day 2007, heading into One Night Stand, Extreme Rules. We know going into that show, Bobby Lashley will finally get his hands on Vince McMahon for the ECW title. So looking forward to getting back to seeing how that ends up going. Other than that, you can usually find me over on the PTB Facebook group. Lots of good discussions and stuff over there. And depending on when you're listening to this, it was already announced over there, our next tournament is going to be starting up shortly, where we are going to be determining, speaking of music, we are going to be determining the greatest song of the 2000s. Mm. Of course, that's 2000 to 2009 is the decade we're going to be doing. We have a total of 704 songs that we're going to be going through across eight. Yes, it's going to be a big one. So
that is a lengthy tournament.
it is. In fact, many of the artists we talked about on this episode are going to be heavily featured in that tournament. So it is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a long one, but it is going to be a lot of fun. That tournament will kick off officially on Friday, June 30th at 10 a.m. Four matches go up a day on the Facebook group. So if you are wanting to get involved but you're not a member, let us know. We'll send you. We'll send you an invite to be a member, and then you can get involved in the tournament. So, very excited. There's a lot of big songs in that tournament that I think are going to do very well, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the nation, what the nation thinks is going to be the greatest song of the 2000s. So, it's going to be a lot of fun. But with that, we will go ahead and wrap it up here. So, Keith, thank you again for joining me. It's always fun having you on. We have a lot of great times talking some of these topics, and it's always fun to do. So I look forward to the next time that we will be able to do it. So for Keith Langston, I am Steve Riddle. This has been Making Mount Rushmore here on the PTB Pop Experience, and we will see you next time.